The rivalry between Gladstone and Disraeli is one of the most famous examples of political antipathy in the whole of the 19th century, or indeed the 20th century, come to that. It's often the case that political leaders, to a degree, put on an act when they are opposing one another, as the requirements of the political game require them to do. However, when we're talking about Gladstone and Disraeli, we have one of those pure examples of rooted antipathy. The two men did not get on, and you could argue that because they didn't, the extent to which their policies appeared different can be exaggerated, because all of this is refracted through a prism of dislike. There's a significant difference in their backgrounds and political careers before they reached what Disraeli was going to call the top of the greasy pole in the late 1860s. Gladstone was born in 1809. Disraeli was 5 years older. He was born in 1804. Gladstone became an MP for the first time in 1832. Disraeli, not until 1837. These dates may seem trivial and insignificant. Actually, I think they matter quite a bit. One of the motivating factors of Disraeli's dislike of Gladstone was that he believed Gladstone to have been born to privilege, always on the inside track, nothing particularly difficult in getting him at or near the centre of power from a relatively early age. Gladstone was indeed an MP when he was 23.
Disraeli, after a number of failed attempts — Gladstone had had no failed attempts — Disraeli was almost 10 years older than Gladstone had been when he finally got into Parliament in the summer of 1837. The resentment started there.
So there is, if you like, a kind of envy by Disraeli, who is an outsider from a prosperous but Jewish intellectual background. Gladstone, very much the 18th, early 19th century insider. His family's money had come from trading activities in and around Liverpool in the 18th century, including the slave trade. And on the basis of the fortune that provided for the Gladstone family, they bought great estates, so that Gladstone could be seen almost as a son of the aristocracy. So there's envy, and there's a lot of antagonism. Let me just give you a couple of examples. Here he is, as Prime Minister, writing to one of his senior ministers, actually the 15th Earl of Derby. "Posterity," he wrote, "will do justice to that unprincipled maniac Gladstone. Extraordinary mixture of envy, vindictiveness, hypocrisy and superstition. And with one commanding characteristic, whether he's Prime Minister or Leader of the Opposition, whether preaching, praying, speechifying or scribbling, never a gentleman." Disraeli went in for a lot of carefully scripted, what we might these days call sound bites, I suppose. Gladstone went in for much more in the way of speechifying on big issues. But he did sum up his antagonism to Disraeli when he said this: "The Tory party, of which he had been a member, had principles by which it would and did stand, for bad and for good. All of this Dizzy destroyed. And finally, when Queen Victoria was most reluctantly, because she much favoured Disraeli over Gladstone, required to accept that the Liberal Party had won the general election of 1880, she really wanted almost any Liberal Prime Minister but Gladstone. And here is one of the candidates on her shortlist, Lord Granville, telling her that Gladstone it must be, and giving a contemporary insight into the nature of the hostility. Lord Beaconsfield," that was the title which Disraeli took in 1876, "Lord Beaconsfield and Mr. Gladstone are men of extraordinary ability. They dislike each other more than is usual among public men. Disraeli has the power of saying in two words that which drives a person of Mr. Gladstone's peculiar temperament into a state of great excitement." Gladstone thought that Disraeli was a poser, a charlatan, a lightweight. Disraeli thought that Gladstone was a humbug. The extent to which the two parties which the men led actually differed can, in my view, easily be exaggerated because their two leaders were so antagonistic to each other.